What's up?
Hi.
I'm Disco.
I'm Lady Adeline.
And we are 30 and 3.
And this is our first podcast, so we're getting used to this. But we're going to talk about why we're called 30 and 3.
Yeah. Hey, Sarah.
What?
Why are we called 30 and 3?
Well, 30%. Of women report sexual abuse. And only 3% of men do it.
Yeah. That means when a woman is sexually abused, only 30% of that population is likely to report. And out of all the men that actually are sexually abused, only 3 of them per 100.
Yeah, 97% of them do not report it.
Yeah. So we decided to call ourselves 30 and 3 because Sarah, Lady Adeline, was sexually abused as a child.
As was Disco.
Mm-hmm. And we're speaking up about it. We're making a difference.
We have used our music platform to do this. We basically started talking about it as friends. It was just something that was between both of us, where we were realizing the kinds of stuff that we had gone through. And it was almost opened up because of talking about sexual abuse that was done as an adult. Like, mm-hmm. We almost went like backwards, went back to a crime scene sort of thing, because as adults, we still experienced the sexual abuse. And because of that, we were able to be like, well, like, why did these things happen? And I've gone through enough recovery to be able to, at the time when we were friends, be able to explain to him that there are patterns in his life that are going to be a sign of what his childhood might have been like.
Mm-hmm.
And that was...
oh, the good old days.
That was pretty brutal.
I learned a lot. Learned a lot in those days.
Yeah.
That was after I met Sarah in April 2018. I went from a life of smoking weed and drinking alcohol and smoking cigarettes and playing video games to just everything changed so quickly.
Yeah.
And by the time August of 2018 came around, I was at your house.
Yeah.
In a program of recovery.
Yeah.
Not talking to any of the narcissists and toxic people that were in my life.
Yeah.
And everything changed.
Yeah, it was very sudden. And I've learned a lot in therapy that when your body is ready to face the memories of trauma or something even resembling your trauma, if your body is willing to accept it, it can make you feel just like garbage.
Yeah.
Like, your body hides it from you for a long time for a reason, to keep you alive. And
which is the repression, repressing of the memories,
that's why with PTSD, which both Disco and I have, the hippocampus shrinks, and that's the area of the brain that is going to carry all the long-term memory. And when it shrinks, it doesn't really give you access to your trauma, essentially. So as you go through recovery, it starts to kind of go back to like go back to its original size. And as it does, then it opens up these areas for the body to kind of allow you to face things a little bit at a time to see if you can survive it.
The hippocampus?
Yeah.
Goes back to its original size?
Yeah.
So that's the memory organ.
Yeah, essentially,
one
of
them.
Yeah, one of them.
Yeah. That's really interesting. I mean, ever since meeting Lady Adeline and learning about My own PTSD, my own childhood sexual abuse, and recovering from that, I've learned that learning about parts of the brain has been so, it is so incredibly helpful to recovery. Like, you're talking about the hippocampus and how it shrinks with PTSD or it shrinks with trauma, and then it has to grow over time as you get more and more capable of handling the emotions.
Yeah, well,
with the memories.
When you have PTSD, there's a difference between CPTSD and PTSD. And
complex post-traumatic stress
complex
disorder.
Complex.
Versus
post-traumatic, yeah.
Traumatic.
Post-traumatic is going to be like one or two incidents of trauma. This could even be something like you choke and nobody is there to help you. So your body thinks that you're going to die.
Or you're stuck in a tree.
Or you get in a car accident.
Your face was like, that's an oddly specific incident. Yeah, well, that happened to me. I was stuck in a tree, hanging from a tree by like two of my hands for half an hour screaming for help.
That's awful. Yeah. Well, we already know that your parents were garbage.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You were basically born into PTSD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like,
it's not a genetic disorder, but I was born with it.
Well, the PTSD is... formed basically when the body and the brain realize that nothing is going to support you or help you. I mean, if you think of a baby, how it can't do anything for itself, it's not able to protect itself at all, and the mom or the dad comes in and it's crying, or it made a mess, or it gets its foot stuck. My son used to get his foot stuck in the bars on the crib. If I never came into the room to release his leg from between the bars on the crib, his brain has to make sense of what's happening and has to be like, from now on, your environment is a super threat to you, and no one's going to protect you. No one's going to save you from it. No one's going to make sure that you survive. So you have to be the one to make sure that you survive, because you have no support.
Yeah, that'd be terrifying.
Yeah.
Like, not having any way to get yourself out of a scary or dangerous situation.
Yeah.
I mean, as an adult, it's very scary. As a baby, it's very scary. Even waking up in the middle of the night and thinking that you're the only thing left on the planet.
Yeah.
And that's usually what a baby goes through, and that's really scary for them. Like, they need support.
Well, luckily, they don't have a prefrontal cortex, so they're not going to be able to reason or rationalize very much.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, they've never witnessed anything like ghosts or spirits or demons or, like, movies that show scary stuff. Like, they haven't witnessed very many of these things, so they can't go back and be able to recognize what could be scaring them. They only have the ability to know what they knew in utero and what they know this far along.
Mm.
We have the ability to remember things like monsters and all. Someone's gonna attack you. You can be laying in bed and in your mind scan what the inside of your home looks like and think that someone could break into your home. But someone like a baby can't even imagine those things, so they're not as afraid.
That's where the amygdala comes in too, right?
Well, yeah, that creates the stimulus towards doing something about their problem. And but if the limbic system, if the hypothalamus hasn't had access to being able to tell that baby, like, oh, you've seen this before, you've done this before, this is what has happened before, then the amygdala has no motivation. So,
well, hold on. Let's break that down, because the hippocampus is the memory, one of the memory organs of the brain.
Uh-huh.
And
long-term memory.
Helps with long-term memory. Okay, so then the amygdala comes into play when we're met with a threat, and you said...
Well, not necessarily. The amygdala is both positive and negative, because all the amygdala is going to do is try to motivate in one way or the other. It's going to motivate your body to respond to a threat, or it's going to motivate your body to respond to what's going to feel the best next. Like when you...
So it's just in charge of like primal responses.
Yeah, well, like kind
of. Reptilian brain stuff.
It's the motivator. It's the one that doesn't actually physically move you, but it will send messages that will be like, remember that time you had that milkshake? You had fries with that. It'll like...
But it's also going to make me want to lay in bed with a blanket.
Yes.
And
it's going
a racing heart trying to like be safe.
It's going to stimulate what it feels like to lay in your bed and what the textures of things are like and your memory. It's going to be like communicating with the hypothalamus to be able to be like, so what did it feel like the last time I had a panic attack? What did it feel like when we were able to get better from this? And so it'll motivate you to get in bed.
But it can also, it motivates, like, the fight or flight response and, like...
Yeah.
Like, getting in an argument or leaving the room or something when something gets too threatening.
Well, fight or flight response is when it motivates you towards what it thinks is going to protect you based on what the body has already produced memory-wise.
Okay.
And then the prefrontal cortex makes the final decision. But if your amygdala and your hypothalamus, if your limbic system is basically saying every single thing that we want to do right now, it leads to us dying, then the prefrontal cortex goes, okay, well, we're going to die, then time to shut off. And that's when you can black out. That's when you can become the most chaotic and emotional. You get scatterbrained. You can't think straight. You need to just shut down because your body's shutting down because your prefrontal cortex is like, the final decision is let yourself die. So you lay in bed. You lay in bed because you have nothing else you can do.
Okay. Well, I think we could probably make a whole episode of a podcast about brain.
Yeah, I do. One of the episodes I want to talk about the three main systems of your brain and how they affect you based on your situation in comparison to your situation when you have PTSD and your situation just as someone without PTSD.
Well, it's fascinating. Like, it really is. Just to know how different parts of your brain organize your thoughts and motivate you to do different things.
Yeah.
Like, 'cause that's kind of the point I was getting at, though. When I learned about what the amygdala does, I was like, when I get a trigger of something that makes me feel an incredible amount of anxiety or stress, because like PTSD is a stress disorder, and that's something I have to remind myself whenever I'm like, why am I reacting so harshly to this?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I have a stress disorder. Okay, so I have to remind my prefrontal cortex, like I have to remind my executive center to make decisions and do the thinking, and I have to stop my amygdala from freaking out because it's making me want to run away from the situation, and then I have to like have a nice snack, lay down, talk about my feelings. And
well, do you know what that having a nice snack, lay down thing is though?
It's the amygdala.
It's rewriting more information for the hypothalamus, because if you're stressed out, let's say you get triggered, you're stressed out, if all your hypothalamus has to go off of is the last time you were this stressed out, you did ABC. Well, if you decide to go, I know that the last time I was stressed out, I did ABC, then your prefrontal cortex is already final decision. I'm already aware of this, so I choose to blank.
Mm-hmm.
So you're giving, that's why breathing's so important, because when you bring enough oxygen to the brain, you give yourself the ability to have the prefrontal cortex not go offline as quickly.
Okay.
So if your prefrontal cortex is online, you're going to have the ability to make that final decision to go, you know, last time I freaked out, I punched the wall, I did something irrational. Yeah. But this time, I'm going to breathe, and I'm going to, and as you breathe, if you have had any kind of healthier behaviors that have helped you Instead, your limbic system, your hypothalamus is going to be able to be like, oh, I remember when you breathed last time, you also listened to chimes. You right. also had a glass of water. And these are the things. And so your amygdala goes, I'm still like, I part of me is like, I don't know, this is the bad stuff. Let me tell you the threats because this is how I protect you. But also, oh, you're right. A glass of water will help. And so it has the memory of that. And you can, it will motivate you to get water. It will motivate you to listen to chimes. And as these things all work together, then all the information gets sent to the prefrontal cortex. And the prefrontal cortex goes, okay, lay down. Okay, drink right. water. Okay, blank. And, you know, and then that's how it goes.
Yeah. I mean, when I used to get very threatened, or if, I wouldn't even say that, if I would just get a little uncomfortable, I would, like, instantly go smoke a cigarette.
Uh-huh.
Or I'd go make myself a big cup of coffee or something. I would do something that was stimulating, that would help. And that's kind of like what you're saying. I guess with the hypothalamus, which I still don't really understand. It's like,
it's just
last time you were stressed, you did A, B, and C, and then you can rewire yourself to be like, last time you were stressed, you did D.
With the hypothalamus, think of it literally. Just try to think of, you have a building. You have a building, and this building has tons and tons of, I don't know, like receptionists or secretaries, and each one of those has like tons of different places for files. There's one of them that has files of what you've seen, one of them that has files of what you've heard, what you've touched, everything based on your five senses. Although there is,
oh, so it's like physical memory.
Yeah, it's memory of what you. It is hypothalamus.
That's what I'm saying. Hypothalamus is physical memory.
Yeah, it's memory of what you have seen throughout your life that has done something for you in your threatened state. Because the limbic system is all about giving you enough memory, power, control to be able to have, it's like this bank that goes, this is how we stay alive. Like, this is what I know about life that will keep me alive. And so you have the hypothalamus with all of its files. And if you're able to calm your amygdala, which is very hard because all it does is try to protect you. You can't. And if you're trying to protect you, you are listening to the amygdala also.
We should talk about the five amygdala hijacking questions at some point.
Yeah, we will.
I do that with myself still. To calm down my amygdala.
But that's the gist of it. The files, so when you choose to say that instead of being angry, you're going to talk to a friend or have a glass of water or lay down. And when you say things like, my body is telling me I need to lay down. I feel these ways. That's because your amygdala is creating the stimulus of fatigue. Because when you were so stressed before, then you get tired also. But because you're going through recovery, you're now aware of more of your body. And your hypothalamus has enough files about you being aware that it can add new things that you can do. So that each time that you get better and better at being more self-aware, you have all this new, these new ways of coping. Yeah.
You can have shorter and shorter anxiety attacks.
Exactly.
They never go away.
They sure don't.
Hilarious.
No. But we call ourselves 30 and 3 because of the huge effects of trauma on people, on children, that carry into adulthood and continue behaviors of toxic communication, toxic behaviors, narcissistic tendencies.
Yeah. Well, children are the most victimized.
Yes, they are.
And, you know, the thing about narcissistic abuse is that the easiest targets are family. And it's sad, but it's true. And Sarah and I were both abused by family members. And the little known fact is that most abuse comes from family.
Yeah.
And,
well, RAIN.org is actually bringing a lot of awareness to the fact that a lot of abuse comes from family. So,
what's that?
RAIN.org is they hyper focus on ending sexual abuse.
Dope.
Yeah, it's great. It's really great. The abuse that comes from family, it's really interesting. I'm noticing that the abuse will come from family. The children or the child will have behaviors that are off, strange behaviors, things that are just like, you know, showing more body parts, like lifting up the dress,
wetting themselves,
kind of a fixation on bathroom behavior, I guess. That's bathroom behavior, like they just don't feel clean. Don't feel clean, and that never goes away, where you just kind of, once you feel dirty, it's, things should not terrorize or horrify people. When children are horrified by something, they need the security of knowing that someone's going to tell them what's happening, why it's happening, and that it'll never happen again. Or that they will make sure that if it does happen again, that they will not be alone during it.
Mm-hmm.
And with childhood sexual abuse that goes so unreported, it turns into these adults that have never had support, so they carry the same pattern of finding partners that aren't supportive, finding friends that aren't supportive, finding quite the opposite, people that are not supportive at all, but that are also abusive. And because it's so normal, again, has to do with the brain. If the only files that you have are that, you know, when you're touched this way, then the amygdala goes, oh, well, that creates a dopamine feeling. Or that voice or that anger, that creates the happiness, let's motivate towards that, let's motivate towards the Harley Quinn Joker mentality. That's all you have to go off of.
Yeah, if that's your only impression of family or
supposedly
loving relationships, then that's what you're going to keep creating.
Yeah.
Like, I had incredibly dismissive, rude, put down parents that were neglecting, the effect of that was that I found relationship after relationship, both with friends and romantic partners, that were, they were abusive, but it was almost as if, like, they weren't hitting me and saying, you know, I love you, why do you make me do this? It was really more like they were manipulative, there are put downs, it made me in those relationships I just couldn't achieve my full potential because they wanted to be the most important thing in my life. They didn't want me to be important to myself, because that's how my parents were like. And so the interesting thing is that there's no like catch all if you have an abusive relationship with your parents, or if you had abusive parents, you're going to turn out this way with, like, Exhibit A, Exhibit B, Exhibit C.
Yeah, it's not really that.
Yeah, it's not that simple.
Straightforward.
It's really, like, the relationship you have, and this goes with anybody, not just with abusive families, but the relationship you have with your family and with your parents is going to affect the relationship you find with any people in your life. That's going to be a meaningful relationship. It's going to emulate the interactions you had with your parents, because we are going to seek that out ourselves to recreate because it's comfortable. We want things to be something that we know. We want new experiences to be somewhat similar to old experiences so that we're comfortable as we venture out into the world.
Yeah.
And I had to really slowly, like, if Sarah had never been through trauma herself, but she knew everything that she knows about trauma, and she tried talking to me about it, I probably would not have listened. I would have been like, you are an alien to me. Stay out of my life. But because she's been through it and she got the chance to recover a little bit before we met, I got the opportunity of getting baby stepped out of my current stage of life where things were very toxic. I had a lot of bad habits. I had a lot of bad friends. She was able to take me by the hand and say, I've been through all of this. This is kind of what you have to look forward to. This is what you should look out for. And it changed my life because there was some sort of familiarity between my old ways and these new ways that were healthier. And it was incredible to have that.
Smiling.
Smiling.
So that's why I asked her to marry me. So, spoiler alert, you should check out our website, 30and3.org.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's incredible. And that's what sucks about having abusive parents. Like, I've talked about this with my therapist over and over again. I couldn't imagine having a relationship with my children anywhere close to the relationship I had with my parents. And when I told them that, when I told my parents that, they were like, just you wait and see. Raising kids is hard. You're going to turn out just like us. And I'm like, that's the worst cop-out
fucking
excuse
I've ever
heard.
Molesting your kids?
Yeah.
That's how...
Well, at that point in my life, I hadn't realized that. I didn't know that.
Yeah, well...
It's just like...
That's their dirty little secret.
Well, not anymore.
They're still... they're still at large. One of the things that we are wanting the most from our music, from our YouTube, from our podcast, from all of the stuff that we do, everything that we move towards, is to be able to give adults a place to safely talk about their childhood sexual abuse and be able to get into recovery if they're dealing with addiction, be able to get in recovery, have it be like just somehow a safe place for them, and be able to get, I don't know how to say it.
Well,
in a nice way, but frankly, the criminals, the people who've done these things to these now adults who were children, innocent children, to get them, have them pay for what they've done, whether it be in court, whether it be suing, whether it be jail, whatever it is, they need to pay because my father hurt the animals on a brutal level, and now there's a law passed that says that animal abuse is seen as a felony. He would have a felony, and I don't even know what he's doing now.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, I mean, we want to create a community of people who can recognize abuse, speak up against it, get validation for their own experiences of abuse. I mean, because with validation, we can recover faster from our own traumas.
Yeah.
And then we can bring more awareness. And with that awareness, we can bring justice to the adult victims of childhood sexual abuse.
Well, and scientifically, it's impossible. It is impossible for a child to be able to have an undamaged prefrontal cortex and then grow into an adult, or not prefrontal cortex, hippocampus, to have an undamaged hippocampus that stays at a healthy size. It's not possible for you to have memory of your trauma, because if you keep the memory as a kid, your body will think that you're going to die. So your memories need to be stashed to keep you alive. You need to have something to look forward to. And when you don't have that, then you can't function at all, which is why when you're in adulthood and you discover how shitty your childhood was, how dangerous it was to your health in every way possible, then you start to get all the memory back and your body's like, all right, you're going to be able to stay alive. Okay, cool. Here's so much mental illness and so much physical pain and so many health problems. But you know what? I know you're going to live because you actually have support now. You're not alone. But if you are alone, your body will say, you don't have support. You're going to die. This is just like what happened when you were a kid. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to protect you. Or it's going to protect you the best way it knows how to, which is going to be long-term damage to your life, socially, in a job, in a family, anything like that.
Yeah, and that's kind of the point of 30 and 3 and the podcast and the music. Spoiler alert, we make tons of music.
Tons, and we are trying to do live shows in the LA Ventura area.
Yeah, California. And live stream our
live shows. Oh, live stream, yes.
So, but that's kind of the point of all this, right? We want to open up the conversation. We need awareness to spread, because when people have awareness, we can actually get something done about the problem that plagues our society, which is sexual abuse. So, with that,
I think we're done here.
Call it quits. Thank you guys so much for listening. This is 30 and 3.
We hope you like our podcast and you stay tuned in. We're going to have many different episodes where we talk about all kinds of different stuff. And
all kinds.
Some stuff you might get offended about. Sometimes you might be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I've been dealing with that.
We'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Stay tuned.
Okay.
Bye.